Okay, welcome to season two, episode one of the Attended Exchange podcast. And I'm thrilled today to be joined by James Vlasto, who is a very good friend of mine. And James set up Badgemoor Property Consultancy in 2009, having worked as an estate agent for a number of years prior to that. James's reputation for giving measured, honest advice led to the company being formed. And yeah, there was quite a lot of demand for James to work on the consultancy side of things. So yeah, welcome, James.
Thank you, Geoffrey.
Mate, good to see you. let's start right at the beginning. How did you get into property?
I fell into property.
As most of us did, I think, yeah.
Yeah. It was a funny one, actually. I mean, you know all this, but I did my degree, my training was in psychology, like business psychology. And I was meant to be following a path going into consultancy down the classical sort of corporate route. And then I went windsurfing, and then I came back and landed in England on September 11th, 2001, about half an hour after the first plane hit. And obviously everyone in consultancy was being laid off left, right and centre in the months that followed that. Only graduates were being pushed to one side. So I spoke to a mutual friend of ours, Mary, and she said, come down, I'll get you a job in property, it'll get you a flat, it'll get you a base in town, and from there you can decide what you want to do. So it was always meant to be a stopgap. So I fell into it. I obviously went to Foxtons, where I met you, a week in upper price sales.
Morning flats.
me, the newbie downstairs, bright-eyed and wondering what the hell was going on.
So that was, that was 2001. That was literally...
was 2001, end of 2001. Yeah. I think I started in October. Okay.
God, what a tough time to start.
Well, yeah, the funny thing is, I think I've learned from that, because every time I've done a major change has been in a crappy market. And I think it's a really good time to make changes.
Yeah.
I took over an office when things were going really, really well, and I didn't like the fact that any changes I made were incremental. Whereas if you take over or start a business when it's on its knees, it's a lot better for your ego, because you can see the difference what you make, and the efforts that you make are really tangible. So anyway, tried to leave estate agency a couple of times. My inner snob, I'm afraid, was the problem there, is that I felt that I should be doing something more with the education I've been given. Okay. But then I found I really enjoyed it. And I really enjoyed the variety. I really enjoyed meeting all these different people and learning from them. And I love being active. I wasn't ever made, I don't need to be sat behind a desk all day. So being out and about was great.
Yeah.
You know, and I was in the city.
Yeah.
So it felt...
And super successful. Done very well at it.
It's been great. It's been great, but it wasn't necessarily the path that I would have predicted.
Yeah, I don't think many people initially think, I want to be an estate agent. I think some people do feel that they might want to get into the property industry, probably if their parents have been in it. But I don't think many people wake up as a young man or woman and go, I really want to be an estate agent. That might be changing, though.
I think it's definitely changing.
It's glamorising the industry that we now work in. You know.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, the Insta guys who are jumping in and out of... I mean, I don't know who these guys are doing viewings as an estate agent, rocking up in a Rolls Royce or something. I mean, that's not... Certainly not what we did.
That's not it. We were pre-Foxton's Mini, so it was a polo.
It was a polo and then a battered BMW compact that smelt of cigarettes.
Great times.
Not glamorous at all. Very good times.
That's interesting.
Very good
that times. Mary formative got you the years. Because Mary got me the job as well at Foxton.
I know. We've got a lot to thank Mary for.
I think. Thank you, Mary, for listening.
Yeah, well done.
and where did the name Badgemoor, the name of your company, where does that stem from?
Badgemoor was the name of my grandfather's family home growing up. And that was in Henley. And he's always been someone that I've really aspired to emulate where possible, but there's just something about it resonated with me. I like the fact that it was unique. I like the fact that it sounded kind of classical. I don't know. It just, you know, when you're thinking of names, I mean, obviously you just went for route A.
But yeah, exactly. Yeah, really crazy.
I didn't want to put my name on the door. you know, I don't
you,
know.
You
I,
weren't selling property in the Greek islands, were you?
Oh, no, exactly. Exactly, that wouldn't have worked at all. This wasn't a kebab house. I didn't want to have my name on the door. I was always probably thinking ahead as to when my exit would be. Maybe.
And was that granddad on dad's side or mum's side of the family?
Yeah, dad's side.
Dad's side, okay.
Dad's side. Yeah. So dad's dad, the Greek one. And he's just a wonderful man. He was a surgeon and a very quiet man, very measured.
Okay.
When he spoke, people listened because he didn't speak all the time.
Right.
I kind of got that the other way around.
I don't know.
But he was just wise and kind and just a lovely person. So, funny enough, I was terrified of him as a kid, but the older I got, he just became my out-and-out favourite. I loved spending time with him. It was limited, but it was always great. So, I don't know.
What kind of surgery did he specialise in?
He was an orthopaedic surgeon. So, he spent his life, as in his words, he spent his life putting together people who have fallen off motorbikes, which is why my dad was never allowed to ride a motorbike.
Yeah,
okay. Possibly why I do, just to make a point.
Tell us a bit about Badgemoor. So you founded the company in 2009. What made you jump across from the sales side to the buying side?
I was probably going to leave the industry rather than stay on the buy side, on the sales side.
I remember.
We were together out in the Caribbean, and that was through the recession. The bulk of the credit crunch, obviously. And at that point, I had already been asked for advice, and I found that I really enjoyed the different relationship you have with someone on the buy side. It's an elective process, right? So sometimes I felt, and don't take this the wrong way because you're on the sell side, and the sell side's changed, and certainly the way you do it, but I felt like a necessary evil sometimes, the way I was looked at and talked to by clients.
Yeah, yeah.
And I didn't think that was fair because I did pride myself on being very measured and very honest with my advice. But weirdly, when someone's paying you for your advice on the buy side, they're desperate to hear that advice and they want your knowledge and they want your opinion. And I just really enjoyed that. I found that it's something that I slotted into easier. I prefer the longer term relationships with people. You know, you can spend a year hand in glove with a client on the buy side and you really get to know them. You really get to know the families. You get to know how they live and what's important. Try and get underneath their skin a bit, which I think is what makes the difference between doing it properly or just taking orders. Mm. I just loved it. And it's a referral business. I don't advertise at all, never have. And that means that my clients are all lovely. Because you deal with one nice person and all their friends and family tend to be nice. It's been a lucky ride. I don't take it for granted.
And it's fair to say you've become really good friends with a good number of your clients, haven't
yes,
you?
Yes, I have.
Yeah.
I have.
Which is testament to the service that you're providing, clearly.
Yeah, it's also testament to them for being open and allowing me to take control. Mm. I'm not sure I'd be able to do that. I think I'm too controlling as a person to be able
just
to completely.
That you're saying.
Yeah, exactly. You know me.
Yeah.
I'm very impressed with how I'm very impressed, slightly in awe of how easily they hand over to me.
Yeah.
And I really respect that. And I think that's probably what keeps me honest. It's what keeps me straight. Is the fact that I don't want to let them down.
And the typical sort of profile of one of your clients is.
It's so varied now because it's gone through the referral process. It's like a little sort of tree and it's branched out so much that now they're in multiple countries, different nationalities, different ages, you know, everything from, last week I was with a really nice Scandinavian couple who I've worked for about 13 years and they are older. They're leaving the UK now because of the changes to the non-dom rules. And then likewise this week, I've also bought a place for the son of a client in his 20s, his first home, which is really exciting,
really
with his
exciting.
Wife.
Okay.
And I've properly got on the bandwagon with that because I can see where their life's heading and I'm really excited for them. So that's been really
which
nice.
Which area, which village of
so London that one, that one is down in Tooting.
Okay, great.
And this week I was then doing viewings with a Hong Kong client. I do a lot of work in Asia, as you know. In Mayfair, looking at big, luxury flats. So I like the variety,
yeah.
And it doesn't actually bother me. I mean, it's obviously nice to get the big ticket stuff and get big fees,
yeah.
But it doesn't actually bother me because I don't know where the next referral is coming from. And quite often, it's the little one where they appreciate what you're doing for them and the guidance you're giving them so much more, and they can be the most prolific referrers of business.
Right.
And in fact, my most profitable deal was one I did about 13 years ago, where I took this guy on who had a very low budget by our standards. He was buying an investment flat for 250 grand. And most buyers wouldn't touch him. And I was like, actually, I really like this guy. He's just a really nice guy. He has referred so much business to me over the last decade. He's been amazing. So yeah, you never know what's gonna come from it.
Yeah.
The old story that, you know, Pete and John used to regurgitate, which may have been complete nonsense, but it worked, about the badly dressed guy that walks into the estate agency carrying his life in his bag. Turns out he's a multimillionaire.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know if there's any truth in that story, but it certainly sat with me.
Well, when you and I worked together in Fulham, there was a family that walked in literally head to toe in shell suits when they were, and they were from Portugal, I think. And they ended up buying a house through me, 100% cash. You know, it was all legit. And never judge a book, for sure. And so you do, you fly over to sort of Hong Kong, Singapore once a year normally?
Twice a year,
okay.
Yeah, I was lucky actually. I think, so at the start of the company, I don't want to waffle on this, but at the start of the company, I didn't have a black book. So it was proper wing and a prayer stuff. And I was, I felt like a pioneer. I felt like I was in the Wild West just trying to make things work. And effectively, a mate's boss in Hong Kong said, look, I've heard good things about you, but I don't really want to pay a big fee. How about I'll give you X amount as a fee, but I'll introduce you to 10 people in Hong Kong. And I was like, done.
Right, this is perfect.
Year one, I think it was. So I was like, absolutely. So I went out there. I called everyone I knew before I went. Said, do you know anybody that lives in Hong Kong? I don't care what they do. I just want to have coffees. And I ended up going out there. And I think I averaged about 13 meetings a day for a week, and it all stemmed from that.
Right.
So I cannot be grateful enough to Hong Kong as a place. It's been very good to me. I've worked hard on it there, but it has been very good to me. And I love going. I love the city. Yeah, it's one of my favourite places in the world. And then it branched out to Singapore and other places around the world. But you can do a lot of business in a small period of time in a city as concentrated as somewhere like Singapore and Hong Kong.
Right. Great. And I mean, you used the word pioneer. You were pioneering, really. There weren't that many. I mean, now there are.
Oh, there were. There were some good ones.
It's a much more crowded marketplace now than it was then.
Yeah, but I'm not going to try and claim any kind of, you know, originality. I did not reinvent the wheel at all. There were some very good guys already doing it. Probably, though, you're right, probably a handful of properly good ones.
Yeah.
And they laid the path out for us. But now, it's a saturated field with people who I think possibly underestimate how hard it is not to do the job, but to create a continual flow of clients.
Yeah.
Like, that's the hard bit.
When, I must confess, when the market turned back in sort of 2014, 2015, after George Osborne revised stamp duty, we became very, very quiet, as a lot of selling agents did. And then we had a lovely guy come into our office and he said, I'm looking to buy a light. Can you help me?
I remember.
And my goodness, he, you know, hammered me on the fee. And I went, oh, this won't take long. It won't be much work. 13 months later, and hours and hours and hours. I mean, we definitely didn't make very much money on that one. And I just thought, I'm never doing that again. I'm definitely going to refer everything over to James and Simon. And, you know, lesson learned.
Simon? Who?
Simon Connell. Simon Connell's been on here as well.
I know Simon. He's a very good man.
He is a good guy. okay, so who do you perceive? I mean, talking about, you know, the sector that you work within, who do you perceive to be your biggest competitor?
So this is the lovely thing about our side of the business, and Simon will agree with this, as will the other guys. We don't compete against each other. If you work through a referral, I don't know, that's on the corporate side, you might. On the corporate side, perhaps you get pitched, you know, against the other big guys to see who's going to do it.
Yeah.
If you're working purely by referral and you're on the independent side like I am, you very, very, very rarely pitch. I've pitched once in 15 years against a corporate who I won't name. But apart from that, it's your business to lose. So this is the value of referrals. This is why you've got to treat your clients like gold, and you've got to do the job properly, because the referrals are your lifeblood. So the lovely thing is I can meet up with other buying agents. We just exchange notes and have a chat about the market and how we're finding things. And there's a real honesty to it, actually. There's not the bravado I used to have of the, everything's great. You can just be honest about it. And competition, I don't see it. I think there's enough out there for everybody.
Yeah. That's great, isn't it, that you're not sitting
there. Well, you create your own market slowly.
Yeah, yeah. And you're expanding. You've recently employed...
Yep, yeah, we have decided... So we've had a management business for probably 10 years now, where we would buy things, clients maybe wouldn't use them or decide to rent them out and asked us to look after them on their behalf. So we would do that. And we were outsourcing all of the lettings to estate agents like yourselves. But it just makes sense for us now with the size of the portfolio to do that in-house. So I've gone back to the green machine and employed an old colleague of both of ours, who's a lovely guy, Mark Bradbury, and he is going to be
converting
the business.
Guy.
Yeah. So so fun changes for us this year.
Good. Exciting. Great plans ahead. Brilliant. And where's home for you? Where's home for you and your lovely family? Obviously, I know, but...
Absolutely. No, we live in Teddington, which, for those who don't know it, is somewhere in between Richmond and Hampton Court, just down the river. And, yeah, we absolutely love it.
You've got a gorgeous home.
Thank you.
Yeah. I haven't seen it since you've done the second refurb. I need to come over and see that one. Favourite architect?
Yeah, I'm going to struggle with that. I don't think any one person... I mean, some of the classical architects, you can reel off all sorts of names, but for me, it's not necessarily about the architect. You know, it's how perhaps it's how the building sits in its environment on that day, in that moment. But it might be one piece of one property, or one room, or one view, or whatever. And then in another one, it could be something different. I know it's a really vague answer, but some of my favourite properties have been designed by guys our age who have no reputation and no brand.
Right.
I like bravery, but I don't like ego in architecture.
That's a great phrase, yeah.
So I don't like it when they make it about them, which happens a lot. So I love it when you have an architect, and it's normally actually, from my experience, the guys who are younger and coming up through the ranks, who really listen to the client, push them, but listen to them and create something that's going to work for their life. Yeah. So I've seen some lovely buildings and some absolute shockers, as you have.
Yeah.
Architecturally, though, weirdly, my favourite period of architecture is definitely the sort of Art Deco style. I'm not one for, he says in here, I'm not one for the classic sort of, you know, big Georgian 5 metre ceiling type things. I find those rooms a bit sterile. I prefer cosy. But there's something about the simplicity and symmetry of Art Deco design that it really sits with me.
Great. Good answer. What's the best piece of advice that you've received?
This is really tough because I looked at this. You kindly sent me these questions last night or whenever it was. The best bit of advice is not business advice, it would have been personal advice. Probably telling me to listen more and really listen, you know, really listen to people.
I think you are a great listener.
But possibly I am now, but that's right, probably after getting that advice.
Yeah.
For life, I think I've always been quite, as you say, measured and efficient, but you know, measure twice, cut once, I think is the expression that I like most, because it just means do it, but do it right. Don't rush.
Yeah. Because you and I we've got a wonderful relationship, a great friendship. We were best men for each other. So we're that close. And I think I've learned a lot from you because we're very, very different in so many ways.
Yeah,
very similar in so many ways.
Yeah. You've taught me to relax and enjoy myself more. And I've taught you to calm down.
Yeah, exactly. And best piece of advice you would give to the younger generation of aspiring property professionals?
Right, so this, I think, again, is very hard because the industry that we started off in...
It's changed a lot, hasn't it?
It's completely different.
Yeah.
It's completely different to the industry that young guys are coming into now. So they have to... I mean, some of the old stuff still holds, you know. You can't wait for business to happen. You have to make it happen, and you can't rely on anyone else. No one owes you anything. So you've got to be accountable. And accountability in general is my big thing in life. Is I don't like, you know this, I struggle with today's blame culture. I just think, just be accountable. You know, you make a decision, be accountable own it. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, you know, you're going to do well if you work hard, but I think nowadays, even more so because of technology, you have to work smart. Whereas when we were younger, it could literally just be make more calls, do more viewings, something will happen, you know,
it was that simple,
throw enough stuff at the wall. Whereas now I think you have to be a lot smarter.
But you still got to make those phone calls, haven't you? I think,
of course,
you know, WhatsApp is obviously now, you know, right up there with emails and all the rest of it, and you need to be very clever with the way that you communicate. But I think there's still a lot to be said for picking up the phone. When Robin Patterson came on here, he was saying that his daughter's looking to buy a house in Buckinghamshire, I think, and they haven't received one phone call from estate agent.
It seems to be a very different game in the country.
It's all just literally...
The good guys in the country really stand out now.
Right.
Like the difference, you know, 25 years ago
in
town. I can see that now in the country.
Okay.
But the other thing I would say actually to them, to younger people, is just know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
You know, don't blag. It's a very sophisticated market. People are educated. They can sniff it a mile away.
Yeah.
So know what you're talking about.
Just say I don't know.
Yeah, know your product. It's very attractive to be fallible. And, you know, if you don't know, just say, look, I don't know. I'll find out.
Yeah. I'll get back to you
at that
time. I think, it really is, isn't it? What's been your best investment? Another open-ended question.
Yeah. I mean, what could I say? A house or something like that? No, the kids, for sure. The time I've invested in my children is the thing that I get the best return
for. So tell us a little bit about the kids now. How old are the three kids?
Three kids, Holly, Benji and Willa, 13, 10 and 4.
And personality traits for the three of them?
Okay. Oh God, that's hard. Holly is all energy and jumping straight in with both feet and positivity and laughter. And she's a really great person to hang out with. She's very funny. Benji's gentler, far more measured, very smart, happy to put other people in front of him. And Willa is to be seen, but basically a thundercloud of emotions. She's wonderful and hilarious and exhausting all in one package. But we're working on her.
Okay, great.
she'll listen to this one day. Love you, Willa.
Brilliant. Do you believe in the afterlife?
No. Good. No, I don't. But you know what? I wish I did. And frankly... slightly jealous of people who have that level of
optimism,
possibly blind faith, but you know, it'd be nice. I think that you view life very differently if you think there's something else after. I don't, you know how I feel about religion in general, but I don't.
Last meal on death row. I've got visions of you in your old bachelor flat going back 25 years ago, some of the sandwiches that you used to make.
So I have quite an eclectic taste in food.
Very eclectic.
As you know.
But so you're a foodie, you love your food.
I love my food, but I don't have a swanky, sophisticated palate, I just know what I like. So I did think about this. starter would be the lobster bisque from the beach house in Grenada.
Okay.
That was off the charts. It was so good.
When were you guys last in Grenada? When did you last go back?
I haven't been back since we lived there. So not since 2009.
I need to go back with the kids.
Week before my wedding. Main course would be a lamb shawarma with heavy on the garlic sauce and chili, and then pudding would be a really good cheese board with all the trimmings, all the nuts and honey and chutney and all that stuff.
Just jumping back to Grenada, would you ever want to go back with the kids? Do you think was that phase of your life?
I'm not big on going back.
Okay.
It's the same when we moved house a bit, and you know, and I went to lots of different schools and things like that. I've never been one for going back.
Okay.
I mean, I'm not that nostalgic. I miss moments and I miss people, but I've been quite good at being able to just let places go. Mm. I don't want to think of somewhere else as being a better place than I am now.
Yeah.
So maybe it's conscious, I don't know, but I've just... I will go back, it'd be great, but I'm not going to, you know, do an emotional tour taking them around all the places where I had a beer. And, you know, I mean, Grenada was lovely, but, you know, professionally for me, it was a bit of a gap, I'd say, rather than anything else.
Yeah.
Good chance to regroup and plan the future.
Yeah, it was, wasn't it? Mm. Yeah. Yeah, great experience for
lovely.
You and Ashton.
Yeah, yeah, lovely. Yeah. And it was lovely to work. I mean, it was fantastic. I loved working with Robin. He's a great guy. I prefer being here in the thick of it.
We've all got a number of obstacles and challenges in life. What's been your biggest hurdle to date, and how are you sort of most proud to have overcome it?
Okay, I don't think that I have totally overcome the biggest obstacle, which I find balance. I find balance very difficult.
You do, don't you?
I'm desperate to be the consummate professional. I'm desperate to be the perfect husband. I'm desperate to be the perfect dad. And that balance is really hard. And so I don't think I have overcome it, but I'm working on it daily.
And how are you working on it?
By trying to make sure that when I'm doing each of those things, I'm 100% in that thing.
Okay.
I hate some of the modern lingo, like being present. But I am I'm basically doing exactly that. So when I'm with the kids, I'm consciously trying to make sure that I've done whatever I'm doing with work. Whatever has to be done is done. So I'm focused on them. Same with Ash.
Yeah,
my wife, for those who are wondering who Ash is. And I want to just be with her and give her my time. And then when I'm with work, yeah, absolutely. That I find very easy to give work 100%. So it's more about pulling the balance back to the family.
Yeah, okay. It's challenging, isn't it?
It's really hard. Yeah. And I think also there's an enormous amount of pressure today on us to be, you know...
All things to all people.
All things to all people.
Yeah.
This Swiss Army man. It's difficult. That weighs pretty heavy sometimes.
Well, from a friend's point of view, you know, looking in, you're doing a great job.
Thanks, mate.
If you could relive the 1980s, I don't know what you're going to say here, the 1980s, 1990s, or the noughties, which would you choose and why?
So I'm going to twist your question just to be difficult. So if I have to do it at the age I was at the time...
Okay, yeah.
Then... The 90s, for sure.
Yeah.
Because it was epic. And it was a great time to be a kid.
Yeah. We were very lucky, weren't we, to be teenagers. And
we really were. But if I could do it at my age now, mm-hmm. in the 80s, without doubt.
What would you do? Go and work in the city?
Oh, you'd just smash everything. It's just like, it was just such a hedonistic time. And also the opportunities were there. If you had today's knowledge going back into the 80s, I don't know. I just think, you know, you didn't have all the bloody health and safety and people telling you what you can and can't say, which, you know, fine. A lot of that's there for a good reason. But what I mean is there was just less restraint. And I think if you're naturally quite a restrained person like I am, you know, I wouldn't be worried about, you know, going the wrong side of that line. I just think that the opportunity was massive.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, you know, the white Lambo. Working as a trader in New York.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, see where
you
we go.
Think about all the red tape that's there now.
Exactly.
In comparison.
No,
yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think it'd be a fun era to be alive.
Favourite nightclub from back in the day?
Jeff, I'm not a clubber, you know that.
You could party pretty hard back in the day when you tried.
Hush, no one knows that. I could, but
the famous one-handed ankle grab on the dance floor.
let's not have that story. In fact, do you remember that night? That was hilarious.
I put my back out.
Yes, you did. And I accidentally elbowed a girl in the face trying to do a dance move.
Smooth.
My favourite night spot, without doubt, for so many reasons, is a place called the Sandy Mount Club in Rosneagh, which is a small village in Anglesey in northwest Wales. That place has just seen every single chapter of my life with laughter and joy and friends and family, and it's just been, it'll always
that,
stay
that,
my...
That is the one anchor,
it doesn't,
isn't it?
Actually,
that's the
that's
place
been
the it's been there.
It doesn't exist in its old format anymore, you know, with the hexagonal spinning pool table and the sticky carpets and the rest of it. But that place, back in the day, just close to perfect as you could get.
Brilliant. And then, favourite part of London town?
There's lots of little pockets, but for me, it's all about the river. So... two particular parts of the river. I love the South Bank, weirdly, because I'm not particularly into the touristy areas, but I just love the South Bank. I love the visual of seeing London from distance.
Yeah.
And the little, you know, stalls and the food bits, and you walk around with the drinks. So that's lovely. But my main favourite bit is the river from Richmond to where I live.
Right.
You know, being on that water,
it's
just such a calm place for me, and it's beautiful. You know, the turn of view coming back down from
stunning.
Richmond Hill.
Yeah.
It's absolutely gorgeous. So, that part for me is my favourite.
And have you got a boat now? A little boat on the Thames?
Yeah,
we have
got a
boat.
That's a little. I'm not joking. Yeah, we have got a boat.
I know you're not showy, so you want me to sort of
But that we got, that's actually probably my first really frivolous thing that I've bought. And it was bought entirely with the view of captured family time. We've used it probably 10 times. So it's just, you know, terrible investment, but a really lovely thing to be able to do together. And it is, they're captive because they're not going to jump off into that water.
Yeah.
So it's been wonderful.
Good. Okay. James, thanks ever so much, mate. It's good to catch up with you. It's nice to sit down in this format and have a chat. Normally we have lunches together and what have you. But I've enjoyed today. I really appreciate your time.
So have I. It's fun to ask some of the questions that you don't necessarily do.
Yeah.
Not with you, anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. So, mate, thank you for your time.
Welcome.